They're seeking millions of documents and testimony under oath. The Citi probe into the JEA scandal moves ahead. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we speak with Audrey Moran of OurJax.com about JEA and your calls, too. Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, don't miss the live in-studio performance from the Big Orange Chorus, how you can send a singing Valentine to your sweetie this week. But first this morning, a new committee investigating the JEA affair says they will seek millions of documents going back years to try to get to the bottom of how the whole process began, seeking a private buyer for the city's utility. Now, the special committee of the Jacksonville City Council met yesterday for the first time, and their work is being closely watched. Attorney Audrey Moran is one of the members of OurJax.com. That's a new advocacy group in town calling for more transparency and accountability in local government. She joins us now in studio. Audrey Moran, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
What are your questions for Audrey Moran of OurJax.com about JEA? We'll talk about some other news and notes, too, here in a moment. It's 549-2937. Give us a call, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect at wjct.org, tweets to at Melissa in Jax, and our Facebook page is open. All right, so the committee kicked off yesterday. It's led by Councilmember Rory Diamond. He's also joined by Randy DeFore and Brenda Priestley Jackson, three attorneys on the city council, and it's a bipartisan affair here. Looking into the JEA mess, what are your thoughts on the first steps of this process?
Well, I did get a chance to look at what they discussed yesterday. I think they are trying to proceed in a very thoughtful manner. They recognize that the eyes of every citizen in our community is on them, and there's a lot riding on getting this right. So it felt to me like there was a process that they were going to follow closely, and they're going to need help, because if you're going to request over a million documents, you've got to have people who are prepared to read them.
That's right. They want to seek from JEA millions of documents going back to 2015. That's a massive document dump. As an attorney, how do you even begin to go through that kind of information and data? How is that even going to be accomplished?
It is a huge task. And I'm sure one of the things that they're working on now is how do you staff up to do that? Because not only do you need to review the documents, then you have to organize them in a way that you can look back and easily access them as people come to testify, as new issues arise. So it is a document production like no other, and it will require a lot of paralegals, legal assistants, and attorneys working on getting that done.
Is your group, OurJax.com, offering assistance in this matter?
Well, OurJax.com is volunteers right now. We have no paid staff. It is a group of citizens who believe in transparency and accountability in government. So how we're helping is by lifting up the good work that is happening, supporting our council people that are committed to doing the right thing, and then working closely with other parts of government to make sure that not only are we looking into JEA, but how are we lifting up the Ethics Commission? How do we make sure people like Carla Miller, who is a hero in this investigation,
the city's ethics director,
absolutely, gets the help and support they need for the work that they're doing? How can we support new legislation for ethics? And what about the transparency committee that Anna Broche called for while she was council president, led by Sherry McGill and Hank Cox? Lots of great work there. How do we put that into action?
Okay, and if you're just tuning in as we speak with Audrey Moran of OurJax.com, what are your questions about the investigation into JEA and the attempts to sell the utility? There are multiple investigations, by the way. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Let me ask you this as well. This special committee and also the city council president, Scott Wilson, have both indicated that they have some concerns that even though this committee is empowered to subpoena people to testify under oath, there may be some reluctant witnesses out there, people who take the fifth or decline to appear at all. And let's talk about that and the reasons why.
So there are concerns about that. And I think that why it's very important that the city council took the step of hiring Steve Busey of Smith Halsey to help advise them and give them counsel through this process. Steve is one of the most highly regarded attorneys in this city, and he's going to make sure that they understand the subpoena power that they have and what their options are if people refuse to respond to a subpoena. If we're going to take this seriously, there has to be consequences if subpoenas are ignored.
What are your thoughts, too, about allegations or criticism from some voters out there that members of the city council are compromised themselves when they go to investigate JEA? The city council president, Scott Wilson, was captured on a fan cam at an Atlanta Braves game with the mayor, his chief administrative officer, Brian Hughes, his other top staffer, Sam Musa, his political consultant, Tim Baker, and the former CEO of JEA, Aaron Zahn. Should Wilson recuse any involvement in this? And Rory Diamond, who's on the city council, his campaign was managed by that political consultant, Tim Baker. He has been accused of being compromised, although he has asked people to have faith in his leadership of this process.
So I'm a believer in actions speak louder than words. And to President Wilson, he has had a very steady hand of leadership throughout this. He has said publicly it was a mistake to go on that trip. He's apologized for it and has taken actions that, quite frankly, the administration didn't want. Didn't want this committee to investigate. He said we're going ahead with it. Wanted people for it to be a bipartisan investigation led by attorneys. Some people didn't want those people leading this investigation. So I think actions speak louder than words. People make mistakes. I think what happened with Council President Wilson's trip to Atlanta was unfortunate. He has said so. He has apologized. And his actions are all about transparency.
We'll go to your calls for Audrey Moran in just a moment at 549-2937. Now, this committee has also asked JEA to turn over all documents showing communications between the mayor, his chief administrative officer, Brian Hughes, his former chief administrative officer, Sam Musa, and political consultant, Tim Baker. Any communication between that group and JEA will come to light. They're also trying to get documents for communication between JEA and the team that was negotiating the sales talks. That was some more administrators from Jacksonville City Government, along with Deputy Chief Administrative Officer Stephanie Birch. Depending on what the documents show, do you believe this committee should call the mayor and his staff to testify?
I think that has to be a possibility. I think we have to know what happened, how every person in leadership and government was involved, and how decisions were made. But again, it's a process. They're going to have to look at the documents. They're going to have to see what they show. And then they're going to have to call witnesses to respond to what they find in those documents. So my understanding is any and all elected officials, appointed officials, people who work for city government are open to being subpoenaed, that they are going to, nobody gets a pass in this investigation, and no one should.
It's 549-2937 as we speak with attorney Audrey Moran of OurJax.com. It's the new advocacy group formed in response to the JEA scandal. If you have a question, now's the time to give us a call. Scott is in Orange Park. Hi, Scott. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great, thanks.
All right, if you remember back to the whole thing with Fire Station 5 back in 2007, Mayor Payton violated city charter, gave away something of the public to Fidelity in basically a bad and dirty, underhanded backroom deal. And it seems that every time you turn around, you find mostly conservatives, mostly Republicans, not always, and only and not all of them, because there's good people in both, finding something of value in the public coffers and raiding it. And this seems to be like a continual thing. And then they hide it and cover it up. I have no doubt that some of the top conservative political leaders in Jacksonville saw this thing of value and tried to basically raid it and take it from the people to line their pockets. And this is a recurring thing. And until government, until the people stand up and make the government and the representatives of the people decide to put laws in place and make it statutorily enforceable, to prevent these kind of things, it's just going to continue and continue. They're going to do everything they can to deflect this, to make excuses for it, and when they get caught with their hand in the cookie jar, they apologize and say, oh, I didn't know, forgive me. And I just think that there needs to be people need to rise up and demand accountability.
All right. Thanks, Scott. That's what your group is actually doing.
That's right. Our JAX was formed because people like this caller were very, very concerned about the lack of transparency and accountability in local government. And this was a way where people could use their voice, use their collective power of citizen engagement to say enough. And it's one of the bright spots that's come out of this whole debacle.
You think so? Just more engagement by the public and by voters?
Absolutely. I think you're hearing from people who have in the past perhaps shrugged their shoulders or said, there's nothing I can do about it. I think people have had their fill of that, have decided their voice is important, and hopefully they've decided their vote is important.
549-2937. Jim is in Riverside. Hey, Jim.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask, you know, this, everyone's talking about how this is just a community organization of volunteers, et cetera. But also you've been talking this morning about calling witnesses and gathering evidence and taking testimony, et cetera, et cetera. My question is, what authority does this community organization have to call witnesses and take testimony? Why would anyone comply?
Well, we wouldn't have any authority to do that, and that's why the city council is conducting that investigation. They do have subpoena power and the right to call witnesses. Council President Wilson has formed this committee to do just that. Our JAX is in support of the work that's happening and want to be a voice for people who care mm-hmm. about government transparency.
And let me ask you as well, you used to work in the local prosecutor's office. Of course, you're aware that there is a federal investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office into the JEA matter. We will perhaps learn more as that team of prosecutors does their work. Do you anticipate indictments, criminal charges, based on what we know, coming out of that federal investigation?
All I can say to that is it is a very serious situation. And when the federal government gets involved, when the U.S. Attorney's Office launches an investigation and says this is serious enough to spend the resources of the federal government to look into, it's something people need to pay attention to. And I think we'll have to have more information as that investigation moves forward.
At the same time, this city council investigation, just to be clear so people understand, no one on the city council has the power to charge anyone with anything. What they can do is compel testimony and just bring more information into the light.
That's right. And the goal for the committee is what lessons can we learn from the JEA debacle, and what statutes, ordinances, ethics rules do we need to put in place to make sure something like this doesn't happen again? You know, Melissa, independent authorities have worked really, really well in city government for decades. Unfortunately, it didn't work very well this time. Why is that? Mm-hmm. And what can we do to make sure that doesn't happen again?
It's 549-2937. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Audrey Moran of OurJAX.com about JEA. We'll talk about some other news in a moment, but first let's get a few more of you on the air. Patricia is on the West Side. Patricia, good morning to you. Go ahead.
Good morning. I am thankful that Ms. Moran's office is doing this investigation, and as I understand, you're going back to 2013 with your investigation. I am just noticing what's happening with JEA, and this present situation, of course, is not the first time that JEA is seemingly doing, or there's impure activities going on with regards to JEA, as the caller from Orange Park just alluded back to 2008. I didn't pay attention that there was something going on there. But my focus and thought is regarding the previous CEO of JEA back in 2017 when Hurricane Irma came through. I remember distinctly because that was such a devastation for Jacksonville that he was away at his daughter's wedding. And when he returned, I think at the end of that year, he was given a substantial bonus, and then he retired. It's, well, that was his pat on the back for retiring, I suppose, or not being here to take care of Jacksonville during the wedding. But it seems as though there's a lot of money in the city, and it's just being used to pad people's pockets. And that's my concern. And just, again, kudos to Ms. Moran's office for doing this investigation so that going forward,
Thank you, Patricia.
Correctly.
Thank you. And to be clear, just so people understand, this group, Our Jacks, they don't have the power to investigate. They are an advocacy group calling for more transparency in government. They're here to raise awareness, basically, and to get more people involved in being watchdogs on government.
And I want to be sure that your listeners understand that we welcome anyone and everyone to join Our Jacks. You can go online at ourjacks.com and register and say, I want to be part of this. I want to understand mm-hmm. what's happening in government. I want my voice to be heard. I want to know the latest information. And I want city council and the mayor's office to understand government transparency is important, and it's something that we as a community demand from our elected officials.
And how did you hit upon the name Our Jacks? The subtext of a name like Our Jacks is saying someone might be trying to take this city away from us. We're going to take it back. That's sort of the subtext of Our Jacks.
Well, I think you're right. And we heard from lots and lots of people in the fall of last year that they were saying, this is my city. This is our city. We're not going to be, and my apologies to people who love Chicago, but we're not going to be Chicago. We are going to be Jacksonville, Florida, a city that cares about itself and cares about its community and cares about our quality of life. So yeah, Our Jacks means the city is ours. And when we elect people, they hold it in trust for us, the citizens, and we expect them to act accordingly.
Do you think this administration is rolling Chicago style?
Well, I think there are some concerns that perhaps there has been a lack of listening, a lack of understanding what people want, and a lack of transparency that's concerning. The hope is that improves. The hope mm-hmm. is we use the tools in our toolkit to make sure that we can be an example to other communities, not only throughout Florida, but throughout the country, of good government. The good government movement is a national movement that is really, really important, and we should be part of it, and we should be the model for others.
Lots of tweets for Audrey Moran. Let's get a few on the air coming into the show. Here's one from Mike. It's the complacency of the public that allowed a rapacious politician to subvert the system. Brian asks, how would you select a new JEA board and CEO? Josh says, why weren't Aaron Zahn's financial entanglements revealed during the board's effort to conduct due diligence? Julie asked, do you believe there are fixes to be made in the city charter to prevent future malfeasance? To what extent does this debacle boil down to simply individuals abusing their power? So lots of feedback there. Let me ask you about the charter, the city charter. Should the city charter be changed so that the next mayor is not able to unilaterally appoint all of the board members to an important player like JEA? And should there be other changes made?
Well, it's interesting that once every 10 years, our city forms a charter revision commission to look at lots of issues related to the charter and see how we can make it stronger and better for the people of Jacksonville. They're doing that now. They're looking right now at lots of places in the charter where that could be strengthened or improved. And what's happened with JEA, I know, has been part of their conversations. What they're going to recommend, I don't know. But what's interesting about this that folks need to remember, while the mayor can appoint people to the JEA, it is subject to city council approval. And in the past, there has certainly been a little bit of a rubber stamp of people's names who were put forward. What we've got to understand is when we are appointing an independent authority board member, they are given access and control over billions of dollars. And so we need to be thoughtful and diligent and make sure someone comes to that board and all of our independent agency boards with the right qualifications.
Will is on the west side. Hi, Will. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was calling about something that I think your guest said about everybody makes mistakes. And that kind of, she caveated with that. I was thinking about that. I hear it all the time. especially for my children. I have several of them. Everybody makes mistakes, but if you don't hold, if you don't have accountability for those mistakes, then should everybody just go around making mistakes and saying, I made a mistake? And so, you know, that just doesn't fly with me, because if you're talking about transparency, that means you're going to, if something goes wrong and you see it, and you're just going to say, well, they made a mistake and we'll move on, then you've done nothing. Transparency doesn't mean anything. If I see you hit me, if I see you hit me and you hit me and I say, you hit me and I see it and I do nothing about it, you'll hit me again because you know I'll accept it. And see, about the other thing is about, I'm a transplant from Northwest Florida to this 20 years. And I couldn't help but to see it when I start living here, is that you're talking about the complacency of the public. But this city seems to have this zeitgeist of, I don't like anybody who's not like me. And that has to do, I think, with a lot of it, is that people just don't see themselves as being this our thing. And one last point was that the moderator characterized the our as seeing it as someone trying to take away the city. Well, I just can't see that being that. I think our means it belongs to all of us, not just one of us. And I have a more positive attitude about that. And I like that to say, back in Vietnam, when I had to tell a guy from Alabama that I'm fighting for our country, I'm fighting because our country sent us here. And he said, your country, this ain't none of your country. And I was so put aback by it, and that's what got me interested in just listening to political views from people, although I'm not a great participant in it.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
it was. I was so offended when he said because I was really proud of what I was doing, even though I thought maybe we might have been getting off on the right track, on the wrong track a little bit. But the thing about that is this, is I, especially with military people, when they enlist, to do everything.
And hey, Will, I hear you, brother. I want to get Audrey to react to your comments. Thank you for all of that. That's Will on the West Side. Thank you, Will. Audrey.
Well, I think he made a couple of really interesting points. One is the idea of embracing diversity in our community, understanding that it is everyone's community and not just a select few. And I think that is one of the positive things that have come forward with this whole mess of JEA, is people standing up and wanting to be heard and recognizing that it is everyone's city. I recall someone said the other day that the city owns JEA. Well, the city is people. The city is not some kind of corporate structure that doesn't have a heart. It does have a heart. It is the citizens of Jacksonville. That's who owns JEA.
William in Murray Hill. William, thanks for holding. You're on the air now.
Yes, ma'am.
Yep.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning, y'all. I got kind of mixed up with my statement, but I heard something about billions of dollars come in the city, and none of it seems to get to the north side, but it's, you know, I was on the south side the other day. They're billing everywhere. My second point is this city run like some type of machine by some Southerners, good old boys type of, you know, it's my, you know, it's ours. Like the fella said before, it's ours. So it's like a maybe 50 to 100 people, because they had a fella named Thomas King. And he was over the pension fund.
Yep.
And when it come to find out, he just had a high school education, and he on $7 million missing.
I remember that, William. Yeah. And whether it's that scandal or what's going on here, certainly you and a lot of other voters out there have the perception that a lot of money is being wasted, and maybe maybe people are pocketing a lot of money or try to throughout this process. That certainly is also upsetting people.
It's crazy, man. It's like, and then you guys talk about it, and you never hear nothing else about it again, or some come up with the Jaguar, like the mayor. He acting like he don't know nothing about what Mr. Zahn done did. I ain't even educated, and I know better than that.
All right, let me ask Audrey about that. Thank you, Willie. That's Willie in Murray Hill. Two points he made. One, all the money, public money that's been spent, millions of dollars JEA spent of taxpayer money to try to make this sale happen that's now down the drain. Voters are outraged about that. And does the mayor have credibility at all with the public when he says he was not the behind-the-scenes player in driving this sales process of JEA?
Well, there's a lot of people that share the caller's concern, and I think that is one of the key objectives of the City Council Committee, is to see who knew what when, who was driving this train, when did it start, and who was making the decisions that led to tens of millions of dollars of an investment that, to use your words, went down the drain.
Barry on the west side. Hi, Barry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Barry.
Hello. Hi. Ms. Ross?
Yeah, go ahead, Barry. You're on the air.
Yeah. Ms. Moran, I think you might want to recruit some readers for this City Council Committee, because they're being given thousands, as I understand, thousands of pages. And there's a structural problem with our City Council. There are 19 of them. They each have one staff member, whereas the mayor has dozens of appointments, department heads and staff. So if you want to talk about balance and good government and set a model, then your group needs to recruit some funds to staff this committee, to assist this committee, and to do some reading, and also move forward on that charter idea. Thanks.
Thank you, Barry.
Well, I agree with the caller that there is going to need to be an infrastructure in place to actually look at those documents, organize them, understand what they say, and then use them when you're questioning witnesses. That's going to take people who are smart and skilled in document review and organization, and I think that's a very important investment for the City Council to make.
Here's an email from Randy Hilton with the professional employees of JEA. He's the president of that group. He says the board needs to be dual appointed so that future mayors can't do this again. Otherwise, this sort of lack of accountability from JEA will continue. We support a 3-3 mayor council appointments board structure, and then one should be voted in by the civilian employees. Thank you for that. Okay, so a really robust discussion about JEA, but I want to ask you about another matter. You and two other attorneys in this community, Hank Cox and Scott Cairns, are representing the Duval County School Board in their quest to get a half-cent sales tax referendum before the voters. They'd like to have it before the voters this November. This is to raise money to shore up some of the oldest school buildings in Florida, public school buildings in Florida. You recently won a round in court. A judge said that the school board has the right to sue the city. That was actually up for debate. So where does this go from here?
The judge issued a very important ruling for the future of Jacksonville. In this case, the Duval County School Board had no choice but to sue the city, because the city was refusing to place the sales tax referendum on the ballot so the voters can decide. That's how the process works. So it was a thoughtful decision by Judge Wilkinson, and a very important one. It also, the decision said that the Duval County School Board could not hire myself and Scott Cairns and Hank Cox as counsel. They couldn't have their own counsel. And the judge said that was not correct either, that in this case there was a conflict with the general counsel's office and they could be represented by the three of us. So an important decision. Now we are in place to have the judge look at the legal issue at hand, which is, does shall mean may? Shall the city council put the ballot, put the measure on the ballot for the voters in November, or is that something that they can decide whether they want to or not? We believe strongly that this is a ministerial act by the city council, that they must put it on the ballot, and it must happen quickly. The judge will have to make a decision on that based on legal arguments by both sides. That's the next step.
When is that? When are those arguments expected to be made?
They're not set yet. We are working with opposing counsel to get that on the calendar.
And whether it's this matter or JEA, do all of these controversies, in your view, speak to a need for the city governance structure to be revisited, given that the Office of General Counsel, the city's lead attorney, critics say, is trying to serve too many masters? with the mayor's office and some city council members having a very different agenda than, say, the Duval County School Board. This has just been one of several instances where we're seeing these controversies really intensify. Does the city governance structure need to be shaken up?
It certainly needs to be reviewed very carefully, and the Charter Revision Commission is looking at that issue as well. Matt Schellenberg has taken a real interest in that and has been having a lot of due diligence done on how can we make sure that we continue to have high-quality legal representation that doesn't have an inherent conflict. Sometimes in government, there is a conflict, as there is in this Duval County School Board case. And there must be the opportunity for Duval County School Board to get their own counsel. That sometimes could be attributed to some of the independent agencies as well. But this is an important conversation for consolidated government, and one that I hope the Charter Revision Commission will take very seriously.
One more tweet for you from Jimmy. It's nice to hear Audrey Moran on the air. This time, 9 years ago, she was winning mayoral debates. I am with Audrey always.
Thank you.
Of course, you ran for mayor. You still have a lot of supporters out there. Have you ruled out another run for public office, or is that something you might consider again in the future?
Well, Melissa, I'm old enough to know that you never say never, but I really believe my role in this community right now is to help excellent candidates get on the ballot and win.
Well, we always appreciate you appearing here, so thank you for stopping by.
Thank you.
She is attorney Audrey Moran, and she represents the advocacy group OurJax.com. Up next, there's nothing boring about our book club pick this week, Autopsy of a Boring Wife. We'll tell you about it right after this.
I'm Brendan Rivers, host of WJCT's Adapt podcast, where we hear from people in our area helping us adapt to climate change and sea level rise. But first, people have to want to adapt. That's where Lauren Watkins comes in, a professional climate change communicator who gets why that can be tricky, even when she's talking to her own mom.
It can be done, and it can happen where you can get to neutral ground and think about solutions.
Subscribe to Adapt wherever you get your podcasts, or listen at adaptflorida.org.
WJCT invites you to join us for an evening with Ari Shapiro on Thursday, April 2nd, award-winning journalist and weekday co-host of All Things Considered, NPR's award-winning afternoon news program, will join WJCT's president and CEO, David McGowan, for an engaging conversation. Visit wjct.org/events for ticket information.
Like many historic parts of Jacksonville, Springfield is changing fast. Join WJCT and the Jackson for a neighborhood walking tour on Saturday, February 29th. Exploring Springfield's past, imagining its future, is led by the Jackson's Ennis Davis. Tickets are limited for this guided tour. Get yours now at wjct.org/events and see you on Main Street.
I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
Welcome back. Nothing boring about our book club pick this month. It looks at divorce through the lens of literature. Autopsy of a Boring Wife by Marie-Renée Lavoie is our selection here on the First Coast Connect Book Club. Stacey Goldring is our fearless leader, and she is here to explain why we're reading this month. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. Right off the bat, I'm intrigued just by the title.
Well,
Autopsy of a Boring Wife?
Well, I was intrigued by the cover because anything with a cardigan and pearls, and I'm reading it because that sure. is my uniform of
choice.
So
you see a woman in a cardigan and pearls.
Right. The title is incredibly intriguing. I've got to tell you, we're doing this kind of in reverse today because we've already had all of our book groups for the month. But I felt it was important enough of an experience that I wanted to share with you what it's like to talk about divorce. The book has a very funny title, and there is a lot of humor in this book, which is translated from the French. But what I found in talking with many people throughout Jacksonville over the past 2 weeks about divorce, and this is a book about a woman whose husband looks at her one night and says, "You're boring and I'm leaving you," after 25 years of marriage. And she reacts in an incredibly raw way. And depending on your experience with marriage, when you read this book, I found your reaction can vary significantly.
And how so?
Well, one of the first things she does is, you know, she goes online and buys an incredibly expensive pair of Italian leather boots.
And that's one way to cope with a breakup.
Right. Right. And she does some other peculiar things, like giving the boots to someone who compliments her on them and then decides to leave the building barefooted during work and go to basically a Dick's Sporting Goods and buy some tennis shoes that then don't fit. And then at one point in the book, she ends up wearing mismatched slippers. So she's trying on all these different identities using this archetype of shoes, which is, can I walk this way? What path will this journey lead me on? Do I dye my hair? You know, do I really like the speakers inside the house? No. So I think I will rip them out of the wall and bring them outside so I can hear the music better out there.
But that's what this is about, isn't it? Because if you go through a divorce, it's a loss of identity. Your identity is being shaken.
It certainly is. And you know what? When your spouse leaves you, I have not had this experience, but what has been shared in the group is you have to recalibrate. Was that life of mine a reality?
Or was it all a lie?
Right. Was it all a lie? And then what do you do with that? Because you know what? I still love him. We had children together. We had shared experiences. So how do we balance this duality? Oh, and by the way, my children are grown. I have to sell the house where all the memories happened. And I love this house. So you have this double whammy of losing the memories, losing the marriage. And she ultimately realizes, of course, that our good memories are not stored anywhere in a home. They are in our heart.
Yeah.
You know,
ultimately a house is just four walls.
Yeah.
How do you get people, especially as we're creeping up to Valentine's Day, to read about such a heavy subject as this? Are some people reluctant to get into this book?
Yes. And I think what happens, and this is the value of literature because it brings people together, and the value of a book group or just discussing a book with a friend if you're not in a group is, the title was enticing, so we bought in. And then once we started to read the book and digested it, the comments were, it's chick lit. You know, it's really not worthy of your book. You know, I've been doing this for 13 years. I tend to challenge people. Well, why'd you pick this one? But then someone would raise their hand and they would say something like, you know what? This is my reality. You know, I lost my job. My husband left me. And so I can kind of understand why she would just take off in her car and end up on a road somewhere after a long drive, let's say all the way out toward Green Cove Springs or something, and just pull off to the side and begin to holler and scream and moan at the loss. And we don't have to have the loss of a marriage to understand loss, do we?
Right.
Right.
There are lots of ways of experiencing loss.
Right. So some people brought their experience of losing a spouse to Alzheimer's to this book.
You know, some people brought the loss of a job who they thought was their identity. Grief is grief. The process of grief is the same. It is just expressed in this book and translated by someone who clearly is probably a fan of like Miss Maisel or Joan Rivers, because there's a real acerbic tone of sarcasm in the book. But the message of finding a new identity, the message of depending on friends. There's a friend in this book that stands in as the reality check. She's like, honey, you need a rebound. You know, you need to find something, or, you know, you need to look on Facebook. You need to look on Facebook, because ultimately she finds out some news that could really destroy anyone about her husband's next step. But it's also a revenge novel. There is one point in the book where the other woman comes over to her house to have the talk. You know, I didn't mean to do it. It just happened. And she strategically, our main character, removes all toilet paper from the home.
What?
And starts with large glasses of water. So at some point, the young lass must use the toilet. And she thought, well, let's just have her try to figure out how to get out of this. So there's a lot of revenge happening. There are, you know, there are lawn equipment gets destroyed, chiffon robes get destroyed, you know, but it's cathartic. Like, I can see destroying furniture if someone were to do me wrong. I've got no problem with that.
A lot of people fantasize about doing things like that in a divorce, but she actually does that.
Right. So for people who hadn't experienced divorce, their first reaction was, well, people don't do this. This is crazy. You know, people don't act this way. And then it takes one other person in the group to say, oh, yes, they do.
Some people do. Now, this is translated from French.
Yes.
So how does it read in English?
Well, one of our book club members read it in both French and in English, and she said it translated very well. Now, this is Quebec. It's not France. So it's a very interesting, understanding the sense of place. It takes place north of here. So it's a different type of French dialect. But she said that it translated extremely well. And here's really something else that's interesting. I don't know how much time we have, so I'll keep it quick. At the end of the book, there were many people who thought, okay, she tied it up like a bow. People who were divorced and read this book, you know what they said? They said, we can't wait for the sequel.
They want more.
Because they know there is a 2.0. There's that
more.
Second act. Life goes on. So it is a book about moving forward, about that next chapter.
That's encouraging.
Yes, it is.
And we'll leave it with that hopeful message. And always so good to have you here once a month. It's our book club with Stacey Goldring, who leads book club discussions across this community. This month's pick, Autopsy of a Boring Wife. Check it out. And if you have some feedback for Stacey, email her now at bookclub@wjct.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And up next, it's the most romantic holiday of the year. We've got a unique Valentine's Day gift idea for your sweetheart. Don't go away.
I'm Courtney Lewis. Join the Symphony Chorus, the UNF Chorale, world-class vocal soloists, and the Symphony as we present another Beethoven masterpiece, his Mass in C. We'll also perform music from Stravinsky's charming Pulcinella. February 21st and 22nd. Tickets and more at jacksymphony.org.
When you quit your job, it's kind of customary to put in your 2 weeks, right? But if you really think about it...
I think 2 weeks notice does feel a little arbitrary. I really don't know where that came from.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Does that 2 week notice have a place in today's economy? That's next time on Marketplace.
Today at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
New Hampshire is a key prize in the presidential primaries.
2020, this is no time for small ideas.
Let us show the world what America can become.
Which candidates will win enough support to stay in the race?
We're going to do this and we're going to win.
I'm Michelle Martin. Join us for live special coverage of the 2020 New Hampshire Democratic primary from NPR News.
Tonight at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
China is getting back to work, but as the coronavirus epidemic grows, the government's crackdown on reporting continues. The death last week of the doctor who first raised the alarm has prompted outrage at the Communist Party and President Xi. I'm Todd Zwillick. China's struggle to control coronavirus and the story. That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, are you looking for a unique and memorable Valentine's Day gift for that special someone? How about a singing Valentine? You can order one right now from the Big Orange Chorus. Guess what? They're here in studio. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, guys. Now, I want to hear all about this because you've been coming on the show for several years now. And I am guessing that every time you show up, people call you and order a singing Valentine. What is it about singing Valentines that is just so perennially popular?
It's because it's something different than the normal things that you get. We do, we go out, we send a quartet out to wherever you would want, place of work, a restaurant, anything like this, anytime. It's sort of prearranged a little bit. And we sing two songs and present them with a rose and a big Hershey's kiss, which is a big kiss from your Valentine. We take a picture. We also have a card pre-made up with any message that you might want on the for your Valentine. And it's because of the fact it's so unique, it's people love it.
And this is barbershop style singing, right? Old school.
Well, it's correct. It's four-part harmony, basically, all a cappella. And this is what we do. Yes, it is. You might say it's old school, but it's barbershop harmony. It's an a cappella quartet.
And how much fun is it to just practice these songs? I mean, we're going to hear in a moment how good you guys are. But how often do you get together and rehearse?
Well, the Big Orange Chorus rehearses once a week. And we get together, and we're very fortunate as a chorus. We compete throughout the year at various types of competitions, and we were fortunate a couple years ago to go through several layers of competition and winning them and qualifying for an international contest, which we participated on in Orlando, and we finished 15th in the world.
No way. That's wonderful.
Yeah, that was very...
I am not surprised. I know how good the Big Orange Chorus is. So in a moment, we'll tell you how you can order a singing Valentine for Friday. But first, we are in for a special treat, a live in studio a cappella performance. What are you going to sing for us, guys?
It's one of the old chestnuts.
Heart
of my heart.
Heart of my heart, I love you. Life would be not without you. Light of my life, my darling, I love you. I love you. I can forget you never, from you I ne'er can sever, say you'll be mine forever.
How about that? It's the Big Orange Chorus. That was beautiful.
Well, thank you very much.
How lucky are we to get to listen to that? Now, again, if you want to order a singing Valentine, get on the website today at bigorangechorus.com and get that order ready for the big day on Friday. Now, guys, we have a few minutes left in the show. I know I'm putting you on the spot, but can you do another one for us?
I think we could do another one here.
We're going to listen to some more Big Orange Chorus and enjoy, everybody. Okay. We'll be back tomorrow at 9.
And another thing, too, is that they can call in if they don't want to, can't get online, is 355-SING and place an order that way. And somebody will call back and take their order and, or just going online.
355-SING. Sing.
Yes.
Here they are again, the Big Orange Chorus.
Let me call you, sweetheart, I'm in love with you. Let me hear you whisper that you love me too. Keep the love light glowing in your eyes so true. Let me call you, sweetheart, I'm in love with you.
Oh, yay! I am so excited to see you guys again this Valentine's Day week. Thank you, Big Orange Chorus. That was beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us on.
Okay, everybody. Get that phone line going and order that singing Valentine at 355-SING or bigorangechorus.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for listening today. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow and hope to connect with you then. And if you missed any part of today's show, you can catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.